Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
Hello again, and welcome back to Roughly Speaking. I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun. And my colleague, media critic David Zurawiec, joins me today to talk about how a huge media merger, primed for approval by the Federal Communications Commission and its Republican chairman, went wrong. Last year, this time, the Sinclair Broadcast Group, based in Hunt Valley, north of Baltimore, was riding high, ready to close on a $3.9 billion deal for Tribune Media that would make Sinclair the most powerful broadcast group in the nation, with more than 200 stations, and finally, what it always wanted, a presence in the big markets of New York and Los Angeles.
This deal to buy Tribune would create, if they could buy Tribune, one of the biggest broadcast networks out there. A broadcast network, by the way, that would compete with our more right-leaning conservative programming. So that's what they were trying to do. In the media world, this is a big deal. Sinclair was literally looking to compete with Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, you name it. They were going to do this on the local level by basically getting penetration to 70% of all local all homes on a local basis.
We're talking about a 72% potential penetration.
And on top of that, feeding it with some conservative commentary. This company was poised to compete with all the big guys by controlling local broadcast networks, 70% of all homes, and they were going to essentially filter right-leaning opinion through that local broadcast.
But first, the Sinclair Tribune deal hit some snags, and then it collapsed. Even though the Trump administration supported the merger and the FCC chairman favored consolidation. In August, Tribune ended up suing Sinclair for $1 billion for breach of contract.
Breaking news on Sinclair's efforts to save its merger with Tribune.
The Sinclair Tribune media mega merger may be in trouble. Sinclair is the biggest TV station group owner in the USA, and they're hoping to get bigger. But now, Republican Chairman Ajit Pai says he has serious concerns and plans to refer the matter to an administrative law judge.
The FCC is investigating whether Sinclair has been candid with the commission about its divestiture plan. Now, this was a funky divestiture. If you look at some of it, it looked like Sinclair was divesting from certain networks that was actually still controlling.
Well, there were concerns about some transactions that they had committed to in the course of this merger, and that they might not actually be full sales of stations. There were also concerns about misrepresentations the company had made to the agency.
If the FCC and an administrative law judge, when this thing goes to a hearing, concludes they have not been candid, that's a real problem for this deal.
Tribune calling off that $3.9 billion media merger with Sinclair.
The Tribune Media Sinclair deal is dead. Tribune saying that the $3.9 billion deal can no longer move forward after comments from the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai.
Well, Ajit Pai said basically, we're going to stop this. I'm not going to approve it.
If you take Tribune at its word, what they're saying is that a media company that's conservative, that's a darling of Donald Trump, did not have the sort of intellectual capacity to sell the deal through a very friendly regulatory apparatus.
Donald Trump couldn't understand how a merger-friendly, Republican-chaired FCC could not agree to let Sinclair ascend to giant status.
They really seem like they dropped the ball on this thing in so many ways to have the Trump administration, of all players. I mean, this is Donald Trump tweets favorably about Sinclair. They're the local version of Fox News's opinion shows.
President Trump tweeted, quote, so sad and unfair that the FC wouldn't approve the Sinclair broadcast merger with Tribune. This would have been a great and much needed conservative voice for and of the people. Liberal fake news, NBC and Comcast gets approved, much bigger, but not Sinclair, disgraceful. Sinclair and Tribune shares both shooting higher this morning.
Sinclair's rough 2018 is the subject of David Zurawiec's current commentary on the Zeon TV blog. So Ajit Pai, he's the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, and when he said that there was something wrong with the Sinclair deal, I thought, there must really be something wrong with it, because he's very conservative and he was trying to roll back net neutrality and caps on ownership of media entities, right?
Dan, actually, he had totally greased the skids for this deal to go through because he rolled back those caps on how many stations a company could own. And he invoked this UHF rule, where a UHF station only counts as a half of a station. And, you know,
is that really how they got around it?
They did. And it was based in the old days when a UHF, you know, signal wasn't much. But now, with everything on a wire, yeah, UHF signal's as good as any, you know. So anyway, but he reinvokes that, and he believes in media consolidation. I mean, he's staking his reputation on it. Now, I mean, he was really vilified when he took this to the next step and did net neutrality. When he rolled back net neutrality, the world came at him. I mean, just about it, the digital world in some ways. But really, the academics really came at him, the people who study this, you know, and of course, the people who covered for newspapers and magazines knew how bad this was.
And but when it came to Sinclair, even he saw that there was something wrong with the way Sinclair was going about its deal with Tribune Media.
Yeah, we should be, like, totally honest about this. This is still one of the great mysteries of 2018. And I have a theory on, or a hypothesis on it that I'm going to share here, but Pi is doing everything to make this deal go through, to make it possible for Sinclair to take over Tribune and be the largest station owner group in the country, most powerful, really, group in the country. Don't forget, he is appointed as chair by Trump. He was on the commission already, but Trump made him the chair, and it's a Republican-controlled commission, and they're ramming everything through for consolidation for corporations. So nobody in the world thinks that Pi is not going to do this. He looks, though, here's where the rubber meets the road on this. When they started to sort of horse trade how Sinclair was going to get under the generous caps even that he had set up for him, the problem was that they had to sell off some stations. And the deal was, and they had done this in other markets, but this is the other part of the story. I think Sinclair has always flown under the wire. You know, Fogenflick was here, David Fogenflick and I were covering this, and we wrote about him, but it was mainly Maryland deals. You know, there was the, in 2002, they let Robert Ehrlich, who was a candidate for governor, use an executive helicopter that Sinclair's ownership was involved in. And then it became a campaign finance issue because Ehrlich didn't declare it in the right way. So they've been involved in conservative politics for a while, but it was local. Once they get in May of 2017, once they purchase or say they're going to buy Tribune, they're now getting national scrutiny. And as they people start watching this, the New York Times, you know, wrote about, was Ajit Pai meeting with Trump or was he meeting with Sinclair? They were writing stories about this because it looked like a slam dunk was being set up here. But then all of a sudden, this summer of 2018, they actually have to make proposals as to how they're going to get out of still having too many stations. And one of the ones that really caught Pai's eye that was really too much even for him was that WGN in Chicago, this iconic station, this station that means so much to Chicago and people in Illinois.
The Chicago Cubs station, right?
Exactly. Epic station. I mean, I grew up in Milwaukee, and it was the big booming station even there. They said that they wouldn't own the license, so it wouldn't count against them. But the guy who was going to own the license was the guy who owns Mile One here, the car dealership, collection of car dealerships.
Mr. Fader.
Yes, Stephen Fader. And that he was going to have it. Well, when Pi started to investigate, he said, well, wait a minute. It appears that you're selling it at under market value to him and that you will still control this station in a way that people would think of as controlling it. And then he said, I don't think this is necessarily in the public interest. Well, what part of a guy in Maryland, who's a car dealer, owning an iconic station in Chicago sounds like anything in a public interest from the 1934 Communications Act.
Well, no, it sounds like Sinclair is still trying to control this station. And didn't they also have an option to buy it back?
Yeah, they did have an option to buy it back in the sense of these sidecar deals they had, the sidecar arrangements, I think they're called. They are called in the industry. There were other stations involved, one in New York, I think, and two in Texas, where Pi raised questions about the way they were doing it.
About whether they were really relinquishing control or ownership, right?
It's totally.
It's against the spirit of the law.
Dan, that is it in a nutshell. You summed it up. It's against the spirit of the Communications Act. And here's what it is. Look, the 40 years I've been covering this, public interest, you know, think of this. Congress is meeting in the 1930s. They got this new thing called radio. We're in the midst of the Great Depression. There's a lot of socialist thought in this country, some communist thought in this country. But what they're saying is, look, Britain's going through this same thing. And in Britain, they're saying the strongest broadcasting voice in the nation should be this thing called BBC, which is funded with a tax on television. There's a firewall between it and government, but it's government. It's not private. It's not corporate. Well, CBS and NBC, Bill Paley and David Sarnoff, who really founded electronic media as we know it with radio, they've got their lobbyists out there and other companies, too, that are involved in this point. They've got their lobbyists, and they win. And here's the deal. Congress says, no, we're not going to go with that model. We're going to go with a corporate model. Yes, the airwaves are owned by the American people. We agree with that. But the networks have promised to be good stewards for the American people and to broadcast in the public interest. Okay, well, we've been arguing for 50, 60, 70 years about what the hell the public interest means. But, you know, when you and I were growing up, it meant Sunday mornings you had public affairs shows or you had locally produced shows like the one you did on Channel 2. That was how they defined. Now it's infomercials for juice-o-matics and knives that can cut stuff, you know?
Less and less local programming all the time. Yes. You're right, it's filled with infomercials. And I often wonder, when I'm driving down streets in Baltimore, I'm looking at trash, and I'm thinking, where's the public interest, the public service announcements on television about trash? Just to give you an example, when we were kids, there used to be litter bug campaigns and all public interest, all, I guess, funded by the government, the local stations provided, right? Now you hardly see any public service announcements or even public service programming on the TV. And Sinclair has a different model, right? It's not the network model. They're sort of grassroots. They came up from local TV starting here in Maryland, right?
It's exactly. It's almost the reverse. Instead of top down, it's bottom up. Yeah, you're absolutely
right. Yeah, and they were on the verge of becoming what? Approaching Fox or something like that?
Well, I don't know if they'd have had more households because in terms of how you count it, but they would have had more stations. I mean, the networks In this deal in the Communications Act, this is in America, if you have lobbyists and you're a big corporation, this is how it works. Not only did they give the networks the chance to broadcast over the choice airwaves, but they gave them each at least five, I think in some cases it may have been 8, 10, or 12, owned stations, which today are even cash cows. But in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you could have a drunken general manager who played golf every day and wasn't sober enough to tie his goddamn shoes, and they were making money hand over fist. That's what we used to laugh in the early days when I was a critic, that a broadcast was a license to print money, you know? But even today, an O&O like Channel 13, WJZ, is owned by CBS. Those are the things that are supporting the network. The profit is still so huge.
In the case of this proposed deal between Tribune Media and Sinclair Broadcasting, it would have created a very large company. Tribune was going to go along with it. Obviously, they were ready to sell to Sinclair to be part of this. Now, they're suing Sinclair because they say in their suit that Sinclair did not take care to prepare for this deal to comply with the Federal Communications Commission Act.
Right? Dan, that's the most fascinating thing, because I wrote about this a lot at the time, but in writing for a piece we have online now in Sunday in the Sun, I went back through all of this stuff, and one of the most fascinating things when I actually read the Tribune lawsuit and the Tribune language that they used, it was amazing. Tribune was going to be partner with these guys, okay, with Sinclair. It would not only, they have stations in big states and in battleground states that are would have been cash cows during the midterms. They would have just, when with the political advertising, Ohio's, they have the number one state, Tribune, number one news station in Cleveland, for example. So it gets a ton of political advertising because it's a, you know, blah, blah, battleground state and all of that. So if you have a contested congressional race or a governor's race, it made so much money, which Sinclair didn't get because they didn't get to take it over. But Tribune was going to be, and Tribune, getting Tribune would get Sinclair into New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the big markets for the first time. They would no longer be a regional in that sense. But Tribune's language in that lawsuit and in their statements was so hot by the standards of corporate TV talk, I couldn't believe it. They called it something like a spectacular failure.
It looks like what Tribune is saying is you caused this money because you were incompetent. You didn't know how to navigate the deal through the DOJ and the FCC, and through a DOJ and an FCC of the Trump administration that was incredibly favorable for this deal to go through.
And they condemned Sinclair for being so overly aggressive. And they claim that Sinclair was threatening to sue the Department of Justice, which they're like, what are you doing? You know, they claim that Sinclair basically, by its aggressive, super aggressive tactics in handling this, alienated the very people who they were asking approval from.
Well, the Smith brothers are very conservative. We know that. But maybe they're libertarians, too. You know, less government, sort of like Koch brothers running a TV company, a broadcasting company. I mean, are they? What do we know about that? Because I often wonder, are they doing this because they think this is what their audience wants? You know, the Boris Epstein commentaries and the conservative slant on things. Are they doing that because they think, well, we have a lot of Fox stations, that's what our audience wants? Or is it because the people who are running this company are very conservative and even libertarian?
You know, I'll tell you something, Dan, and this is a choice I made. Because I knew I was going to have to try to understand this company. Some might say, well, try to understand the owners. But I've tried not to, as much as I love doing this with people like Nixon and that, psychoanalyzing them, I have tried not to do that with the Smith brothers because I don't want to make it about personality. You know, sometimes reporters, you know, they don't like, it's like Roger Ailes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Roger Ailes, what Roger Ailes did the women, and I'm not going to say allegedly, what Roger Ailes did the women there with his predatory sick behavior, it's hard for me to look clearly sometimes at other aspects of that company. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't want that to ever happen with the Smith brothers.
The only reason I ask is because if the thought of suing the Justice Department when you're trying to get from the FCC approval for this big merger, to me sounds like, you know, overly aggressive or maybe even hostility toward government.
I think your explanation, that analysis would be key on. You know, we don't know much. I mean, I try to deal with what I do know about him. You know, one of the brothers donated money to Greg Gianforte, the Montana Congress guy who body slammed the reporter from The Guardian. So you go, okay, wait a minute. You're one of the people who makes money off a media company and you're giving money to a candidate who body slammed a reporter. How does that? So try to psych that out. I can't. My head explodes. You know, it's like, okay, fine. I don't know who these guys are. But your explanation, given the premise that you're dealing with sane individuals, makes intellectually coherent individuals, gives, I'd say that's a reasonable explanation of what's going on. But to get to that point where Tribune was that angry. Now, in fairness, so we always say, you know, what the other side says. Sinclair countersued and says that Tribune is just trying to take advantage of this, quote, unfortunate turn of events, which is fascinating phrasing for Ajit Pai going 180 degrees and slapping you down, this unfortunate event, and that they are trying to score a, quote, windfall out of it. So, okay, that's their saying. They claim they did everything by the book in terms of this. They didn't try to hide anything from the FCC about who Fader was or anything else.
You describe what was promising to be a great year, a banner year for the Smith brothers and Sinclair Broadcasting, and it's not turning out that way. So where do they go now if they really want to grow, right? If their strategic plan is to become this huge media company in many more markets, including the big markets, what happens now? Do they have any place else to go?
Well, we tried to talk to them because one of the questions we posed in an email to their spokesman was, where do they go from here? Exactly that. As reporters, that's what we ask. They declined to comment, so we don't know. I do know this. I mean, we don't know what they would have said. I do know that they're bidding on the Fox regional sports networks, which is, you know, like they have a Southern network and a Midwest network, and they have a lot of big college football games. I don't know I don't think FS1, maybe it is. I don't know if FS1, the channel, that might be national, but they have these regional sports networks. I think they're doing that because obviously they think they can make money, but I think they're also thinking they do need to try to get something to move back into looking like they're growing and going for things. It's, you know, the premise of the piece I wrote is it's been a really bad year for them. I say it's not as bad as the annus horribilis that the Queen of England said she had in 92, but it's pretty bad otherwise by most standards.
Make sure you read David's piece at BaltimoreSun.com to get that last reference.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
We mentioned Boris Epstein and these commentaries that all the Sinclair stations are required to air.
The migrant crisis on our southern border has greatly escalated.
The last one was particularly interesting because it echoed Trump's warnings about the immigrant caravan, the migrant caravan coming up through Central America to Mexico to our borders.
The fact of the matter is that this is an attempted invasion of our country. It unfortunately appears that there are many on the left who believe it is wrong to defend our country and abide by the rule of law. The United States of America should not and cannot be intimidated by those willing to use force to get into our country illegally.
Epstein's commentary sort of more than echoed. It sounded like the same sort of rhetoric used by Trump. And then he claimed, or did Sinclair claim that they're not responsible for what he says, that they have no say over that?
Yeah, it was fascinating because Epstein, when they hired him in 2017 in April, which was just about a week or 3 weeks before they announced his sale, you know, which is the kind of thing people say, oh. And he had been working for Trump in the communications, you know. So it's like, you know, it's just, some would, I guess if you like it, you'd call it synergy. I guess if you don't, you'd wonder what's going on. But he hews very close to Trump's talking points. I get his newsletter every morning, so at 6 o'clock I read the
Breakfast with Boris. For more of my content, please go to breakfastwithboris.com and sign up for my morning newsletter, Breakfast with Boris.
I've sat there and I've tried to find one, because I was going to write a post about it, where he disagreed with Trump, but that hasn't been possible, so, you know. But he does echo what Trump says. I mean, I said in July of 2017, when he first started, it is as close to classic propaganda as I've ever seen on American television. I think you can take the close away from that sentence now. And that's disturbing to me. Now, again, I want to be fair. Sinclair, you know, when Scott Livingston, the VP of News, was talking, you know, would answer our requests about stuff, he would stress that they do, you know, massive volume of news in the course of a day on their local stations, and this guy is 90 seconds or whatever it is.
Well, there's no other commentary, right?
Nothing of that stature. He's chief political analyst, and every station that produces news in their chain has to carry him. He's must carry. That was the thing that really set the critics around the country off, the must carry.
I was called out to Sinclair once several years ago. I forget now who was president, maybe George W. Bush, and I was asked to do post-State of the Union analysis, I guess from the left side, because on the right side was Armstrong Williams.
Whoa, yeah.
Right? Okay. So I did my thing, never got called back again. I was going to say, is that because maybe my style wasn't good? Maybe it didn't look good on TV? I don't know. But I don't know of anyone else who's played that role with Sinclair through their, you know, syndicated stuff, right?
Right, yeah. Now, I think you're probably okay on TV since you had a Sunday show on Channel 2 for several years, which was, what, an hour?
2 hours.
Okay, so I think you could handle TV. I don't think that was that would be unlikely to think that's a problem. But, you know, honestly, this is a hometown station, and you'd like to see it succeed. I wish it had handled some of this stuff other than the way it handled. I think when you look back at them across this history, I look across my time here, and I think they're not the only station owners in America who are conservative. In fact, most of the people who own a lot of media are pretty conservative folks. That's the way it works. The problem is not having conservative owners. The problem is when you let your politics infect your product, when you let the two merge together. And I think that's with this Boris Epstein thing. I think that's the problem, that it now has a place on the screen and you're promoting it and you're doing all of that. That's the problem. Look, newspapers, you know, it took me about a year to figure out most of the people I was working for at newspapers thought I was a stupid little liberal nut they could exploit for 40 years. And they were probably right, you know, but they came from, you know what, honestly, I got in a fight.
Publishers are generally conservative. They're businessmen, and mostly men, mostly white men over the years.
I swear to God, I was 26 years old. I was at the Detroit Free Press, and I thought I was their star pop culture media guy, blah, blah, blah. And I get in a fight with somebody about something. Oh, I think I criticized the Detroit News, you know, which is right down the street. And they were big papers at that time. And I went, well, you know, I'm saying to my editor or somebody at the Free Press, I'm like, yeah, but they're going to back me up. You know, they know I'm right. You know, they're on my side, you know. And the editor said, hey, Zerwick, this is like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, you know what? Our publisher is probably at the country club eating lunch with the publisher.
For the Detroit News.
Detroit News, Zerwick. And you're not there. Understand. And I said, thank you, Karl Marx, for that. I do want to say that. That's one of the great things. You know, some people talk about papers being downsized and how they've changed. Well, you know, they said, oh, well, in Trunk, you know, the editor's the publisher. I love it. I love the fact that our publisher, Triff, is also our editor. He's in the newsroom. He knows this guy is standing in the mud, too, of gathering news in America.
As long as it doesn't bleed from one to the other, advertising interests into news interests. And as far as I can see, no evidence of that at The Sun.
No, you and I are two of the most cynical guys there, probably because of our history. I love it. I mean, I really do, and I trust it. And so the early cynicism of them lunching at the country club in Detroit has been redeemed in my golden years in the business.
Well, David, this is my last podcast with you for the year, and it might be for a while. I'm going to take a break from Roughly Speaking and concentrate on writing for The Sun. And I may return to the podcast from time to time, so we may do this again, but it won't be as regular as it has been. And I just want to say thank you very much for doing all this, and also the great fun we had on WYPR over the years on radio. So anyway, thank you,
Dan. I want to thank you. It's been really, and you know, I don't use words like honor, but it's been an honor to do these. And I, you know, I always thought on YPR, and then I thought when we started here, Rodericks is a really sneaky interviewer, and he can jack me up like people. He knows
when Trump was running against Hillary. Yeah,
I thought, goddamn, Rodericks. I walk in there, you know, I'm like, I'm in the middle of writing the story, and Rodericks says, "Hey, Zerwick, can we go cut a podcast?" I'm like, "Okay." And we go into the room, and I'm like, "Okay, I'm just going to cruise through this and get back to my piece." And 5 minutes into it, my head's exploding, and there's bullets coming out of my eyes, and we're wrestling. And I thought, you know what? Rodericks is a really good interviewer, because there's a lot of people can't do that to me. And so not only did I enjoy it, Dan, I really respect you for it.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual, David. Look for David Zerwick's piece about Sinclair's year, 2018, in the Baltimore Sun in print this weekend, online now at baltimoresun.com. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
You've been listening to episode 448 of the Roughly Speaking podcast, a production of the Baltimore Sun, where David Zurawick is the media critic. I'm Dan Rodericks. After a few more episodes, I'll be taking a break from Roughly Speaking to work on other projects for the Sun. In the new year, listen for politics coverage from the Sun's Luke Broadwater and Malia Cromer of Goucher College and the Goucher Poll. Throughout the General Assembly session, they'll be on this podcast to explore the policies, people, and politics of Maryland government. Also, a reminder to listen for The Wait, a podcast series produced by the Sun staff, online now.
With the launch of a new podcast, there's another way to listen to The Sun, called The Wait. It joins reporter Yvonne Wenger on her long and unconventional journey to motherhood.
You know, you come back to it when you're sitting in the doctor's office and they show you an x-ray that shows that you would have to go through major kind of scientific advanced procedures to carry a child, when what feels more natural is becoming a mother to the child who needs one.
A challenging diagnosis after years of unsuccessful pregnancy attempts led Yvonne to look into adoption and foster parenting, what she found and didn't find, and the unexpected place she ended up, motivated her to do something rare in journalism, become part of the story.
This is a story about the children in our city who need adults to step up for them, put their hearts on the line for them, fight for them, love them, nurture them. It's a story about the ones who go back home and the ones who stay.
The Wait is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Yvonne's story is also being told through words, pictures, and video on our website. Go to baltimoresun.com/thewait.
More information related to today's episode can be found in the show notes. Your reviews and comments are always welcome, and please be sure to support our sponsors. The producers of Roughly Speaking are Steve Early and Hallie Miller. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.